AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
This has been a week with so many questions. Will Russia occupy Ukraine? What side is China really on? What is going to happen to commodity prices and the cost of goods like fuel and food in the short term? The free-for-all panel is here. Let's go find some answers.
Live from an oatmeal cookie Friday morn via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all with panelists Jim Wiesmeyer and me, Davis Michelson. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I am handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, filling in for Chip from Real Ag News, the Alberta Breeze himself, Sean Haney.
Hey, Davis. Hey, welcome to AgriTalk, everybody. Yes, I am your guest host today, Sean Haney. Happy to be here. You know, Chip picked one heck of a day to take a day off because there is lots happening in the geopolitical world, and we're going to try to break down a lot of the stuff that is happening here with Russia and the Ukraine, and looking forward to the free-for-all panel today. Davis, I don't know about you. Sir. I know you put together the news. I didn't get much sleep last night. I was just riveted by what was on TV, spanning through the networks, reading some different newsletters. Mm-hmm. Hard to get your head wrapped around everything that's going on.
I don't watch a whole lot of TV. What I've been doing for about the last 4 weeks is trying to get through all of the episodes of MASH on Hulu. And at about 8 o'clock last night, I came to the last episode and I just went to bed. That was just the end of the day for me. It's over. It's all over. But definitely some fascinating stuff going on. And we were talking ahead of the show. I've been watching this sort of, I don't know if you can call it an alliance, this Russia-China connection, you might call it. But it's all very interesting to me. I've got a little tidbit in the news on that may make us scratch our heads.
Well, I look forward to that. What I was thinking about this morning is, now it was canceled, but this was I believe this is the week where Agritechnica was supposed to happen in Germany. So I was actually supposed to be in Germany this week.
Oh, no kidding.
That would have been really fascinating to be on the ground. One, to be so close to what is happening in Ukraine, but two, that's a global show. The dynamic of all of the Russians and the Ukrainians that would have been in Hanover this week, That could have been maybe a little bit ugly in some cases once people got into some pints. It's kind of a fascinating sort of what if.
How long ago did they call that off? Do you know?
Back in December.
Okay.
Back in December.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Which was the cancellation of the reschedule because they were supposed to do it in November. Now I think they're back off. They're back onto the regular schedule. So we don't have another Agritechnica till like November of 2023. So hopefully by then, hopefully by then we don't have to talk about COVID anymore, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, hey, what do you got for the news?
Well, a key measure of inflation showed prices accelerating at the fastest level in nearly 39 years, according to the Commerce Department. The Core Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, the Federal Reserve's primary inflation gauge, rose 5.2% from 1 year ago, slightly more than an estimate of 5.1%. That was the highest level since April 1983. Now, including food and energy prices, headline PCE was up 6.1%. That's the strongest gain since February 1982. And Chip has always maintained that these numbers shoot low, too. Like, there's data missing here that probably would show it's much, much higher.
Yeah, I would have to agree. And, you know, I listened to parts of President Biden's address yesterday morning and, you know, pretty much saying get ready for higher fuel prices, pretty much. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but this whole Russia-Ukraine situation is only going to make all of this, at least in the short term, even worse.
Well, volatility continues in crude oil futures as contracts have once again turned higher, hitting $100 per barrel again in overnight action, only to drop back into negative territory. U.S. crude has moved above $93.35 and Brent above $95.65 per barrel ahead of the open. Currently, I'm looking at front month WTI at $91.64, down $1.17 on the day. That's the April contract. And it's a pretty similar story going out clear as far as the eye can see. Sean?
Yeah, you know what, Davis? And I would think there has to be huge incentive for it to get back into the drill baby drill kind of situation, like bringing more online, you know, especially with the disruptions in supply chain, you know, where are we at with energy independence again? I got questions for you guys in the panel about, you know, Keystone Pipeline, anybody? This is going to be a huge domestic focus, I think, in the United States to get back drilling.
Well, and interestingly, the U.S. imported more gasoline and other refined petroleum products from Russia than from any other country in 2021 at 21% of total refined petroleum imports. Now, on the Russian side, Ukrainian President Zelensky has called on Russian President Putin to meet for talks, saying, quote, "I would like to address the president of the Russian Federation once again. Fighting is going on all over Ukraine. Let's sit down at the negotiating table to stop the death of people." President Joe Biden on Thursday announced severe sanctions and export controls against Russia, boosted U.S. troops in Europe, and outlined a contingency plan for releasing strategic oil reserves in a speech at the White House. Man, we could really use a little drill, baby, drill right now. Sean, I think you hit the nail on the head.
And what do those negotiations look like? And what is China telling Russia in terms of what it needs to do in these negotiations?
Right.
I don't know. The markets really responded. Grains and oil seeds, you know, down huge. Equities up. I just wonder if people are getting a little bit ahead of themselves prematurely and what the outcome of these so-called negotiations could actually be, Davis.
Well, and quickly here, Reuters reports that the government of China rejected calling Russia's moves on Ukraine an invasion and urged all sides to exercise restraint, even as it advised its citizens there to stay home or at least take the precaution of displaying a Chinese flag if they need to drive anywhere. Sean.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you what, I got a video yesterday from a friend of a friend of somebody that is all, you know, in Ukraine working for one of the crop protection companies. Mm-hmm. And it just makes your jaw drop. You know, you think about all the, you know, sort of the protesting we have seen here in North America for the last few years about where we think restrictions are and what life should be or shouldn't be. And then you put yourself in the shoes of what people in Ukraine are going through right now. It's kind of mind-blowing and sort of takes your breath away a little bit as you sort of think about it and put it in perspective.
Agreed.
It's a lot of gravity to the situation. Hey, Davis, we've got a few minutes here. Let's bring in Jim. Hey, Jim, what do you think about these negotiations?
Get back on. Well, I'll just go with the Financial Times, what they said. And, you know, when they announced the possible negotiation, they said Russia's conditions effectively amount to Ukraine's surrender. So I think you were spot on, Sean, by questioning the market impact so far, if that's the case.
Yeah, like, and it doesn't seem like the Ukrainian people at all are going to just roll over and say, "Oh, where have you been our whole lives, Putin?" You know, the longer they're able to resist, the more power and momentum that probably gets amongst the Ukrainian people to, you know, basically people between the ages of 18 and 60, I read this morning, males cannot leave the country. They're being conscripted to fight.
Well, this is the same Zelensky
who fears getting bogged down like Afghanistan and some other battles, because as you well know, Ukraine is the second biggest country in Europe, and the longer it goes, as you said, the more trouble he's in.
This is a Friday where the free-for-all's got some work ahead of it. We've got some big-time issues to deal with. What are the impacts for farmers and ranchers across the U.S.? We're going to cover all of that with Davis Michelson and Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer. When we come back here on AgriTalk, we'll be right back right after this short break.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Infurro Leader FMC. Visit your FMC retailer or infurro.ag.fmc.com to learn more.
We are back on Agri Talk. I'm your host, guest host today, Sean Haney from Real Agriculture and Real Ag Radio. I feel like that Led Zeppelin riff would be like Jim Wiesmeyer's wrestling walk-up music right there. Jim gets
Hammer
into the ring,
the gods
throws his, throws his cape off. He's, let's go, Hogan. Okay, we got some serious stuff to talk about here. Let's get down to it.
Yeah, let me jump in, Sean. There are just a couple. I just want to hit a couple of headlines of stories we didn't get to in the news. Looks like freight rates are going to continue to go up. The year-long freight contracts will be settled up in Long Beach, California next week. Vilsack is hopeful about the U.S. biofuels industry, as is Chief Economist Seth Meyer, and U.S. ag exports for fiscal 22 are now forecast at a record. So maybe we can sprinkle a little conversation around those items as well.
Well, I think when it comes to the shipping rates and container traffic, one thing it seems to be, and this was commented yesterday in the USDA Outlook Forum, this is not a situation that's going to be solved in the near term, Jim. This has a longer term horizon on it to all be figured out and get back to more of a normal situation.
And this is why inflation is going to stay a bugaboo topic as well.
Well, and how do we prevent these containers, Davis, from going back to Asia empty? They could be mm-hmm. filled with not only agricultural goods, but other goods being shipped to Asia, and they're going back empty. It's dead hauls are expensive.
They absolutely are. When you deadhead back like that, you're basically leaving money on the table because they should be filled and sent back. And, you know, all the talk of, well, we've got extra places by Oakland, California, where we're going to store these, you know, store containers and things till they can be unloaded and such. That's all great, but that doesn't, you know, I haven't heard anybody trying to address the backfill aspect of this issue.
Yeah, the average price to move a 40-foot container from China to the U.S., West Coast is likely to be between $7,000 and $8,000, according to the Wall Street Journal. That's, yes. I'm actually surprised it's not even, I've even heard higher numbers than that. So, yeah, this is, this like Jim said, inflation. Not transitory, by the way.
Right, and I think that refers to the year, and Jim, maybe you can correct me on this, the year-long contracts, whereas maybe on the spot market we could see much higher prices for those containers.
Yes, and these are estimated averages, and we all know the right. trouble with that word.
Yeah. Okay, let's get back to Russia and Ukraine. We've talked a little bit about these negotiations that are apparently going to happen. Jim, what role does China play in all of this? There was a story in the New York Times I read this morning that the Biden White House was basically asking China, going back to December, to tell Putin to slow down, not invade. Clearly that request did not work. Is China like one of the solutions to all of this, or what role are they going to play?
Yeah, well, right now they're probably confused because Chinese leader Xi Jinping, as we know, met with Putin in Beijing, and I think that they compared notes at that time, big time, and China obviously knew what was going to happen. And you mentioned the New York Times that revealed that the U.S. presented Chinese officials with intelligence on the troop movement of Russia in hopes that Xi Jinping would step in, but they were repeatedly rebuffed. So the conundrum for China is that they always present themselves as a defender of sovereign independence. But boy, their reluctance to denounce Russia's aggression forces them to a very awkward position. So I don't think we've heard the last word from China.
Yeah, and we heard Secretary Vilsack yesterday describe trade with China as complicated. And Jim, that kind of felt like a bit of the understatement of the year. It's more than just complicated. It's really, you know, never mind the stuff that happens in China from a human rights standpoint, but when you sort of have suspicions that they're giving Russia the courage to do what they're doing, which is a little bit different than the Crimea situation back in 2014. If China's backstopping them from all these sanctions, China's more than complicated, is it not?
It is, and especially the U.S. is in agriculture, number one customer, $36 billion. from, you know, this, you know, fiscal year versus $33.6 billion in fiscal year 2021. So you got to tread very lightly about your number one importer for ag products.
Well, and it feels
quite true.
It feels just a little bit too easy to say too, because this is where my head went is, well, maybe China's sitting back watching what the West, Europe, what happens to Russia, what the sanctions look like if Russia falls into ruin as a result of their incursion into Ukraine. And if it doesn't seem scary enough, I feel like maybe that gives them the green light on Taiwan. But the issue of trade with the U.S. is I think probably a bigger factor in that line of thought than I had originally suspected.
Well, yeah, and Europe,
Dave's great point.
And Europe, you know, for China, but big customers of Europe and the U.S. So yeah, they have to balance that eventually. They'll only go so far acknowledging, you know, Russia are on Russia's side on this one.
But if China can successfully backstop Russia through come what may, that certainly would solidify that odd, undefined union between those two nations.
Well, and give President Trump credit. Like, President Trump called this with Germany and this Nord Stream 2 pipeline and being reliant on Russia for energy instead of an ally like the U.S. President Trump brought this up, Jim.
Yes, he did. And logic just escaped. We have not had good strategists around the world on the Western side, because look at Angela Merkel. Although she was quite intelligent and a powerful leader in Germany, she's no longer in control. A few years ago, she made a strategic mistake in doing away with nuclear energy for Germany. And at the time, just a few years ago, that was 30% of their energy production. So that was a major, major mistake.
Yeah, and we've got commodities off pretty hard here right now across the board. There is red all over the screen. Davis, I was saying yesterday to a farmer friend of mine that, boy, if you were gambling on lower fertilizer prices by spring, this has not been a very good week for you. Eesh.
Yes. And I don't know if the grain markets are necessarily an indication of how the wholesale fertilizer market is going to act, but we definitely saw the sorts of moves that we saw, especially in the wheat market, we saw in the urea market down even at NOLA, which had been underpriced compared to the rest of the world. So there was some catch-up to be made there anyway. I haven't seen that those prices have come back down, but I mean, we were talking some major jumps just in the wholesale market before you get the shipping put on and then the retail markup put onto those fertilizers as well. Not to mention the amount of UAN and phosphates that Russia provides to the rest of the world. It's a major factor.
Yeah. Jim, did Secretary Vilsack have some comments yesterday? I had read that he had said something about warning domestic fertilizer manufacturers or sellers not to take advantage of the situation.
He repeated that, and also any input company and the food companies not to use the Russian invasion as an excuse that they're looking. And you know that the Department of Justice and the FBI, he urged them to look at it, and they are. So yeah, that's a repeated statement that Vilsack always brings up. I do want to point out he had some news yesterday when he said that China wants to join that CPTPP, the replacement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, but he said they won't be able to meet the accord's standards. But then he said something relative to trade policy in the U.S. when he said the Biden administration is also not ready to join CPTPP. He said, doing first, and this is a quote, first requires rebuilding public trust in trade agreements and tearing down existing trade barriers. Translation, you're not going to see a new trade agreement proposal anytime soon.
So, but what trust is he talking about? Is he talking about that from more of the auto side of the equation? What is he alluding to there?
That I'd have to, I'm going to ask, but it could be a series of things. Perhaps the lack of follow through on China on phase one, total commitments. He keeps bringing that up. perhaps some labor and environmental issues and things like that. But I can't speak for him. I can only guess at this particular time, but we'll ask him.
Yeah, you know who's going to look at those statements and be like, what are you talking about? It's the UK, right? The UK is pressing the US hard to have a new agreement as they've obviously left the EU. That is not going to, that's going to be kind of concerning information, I would imagine, in the UK for
sure. And the problem is, depending on how the UK eventual agreement works out, it has to be approved by the Senate. The votes aren't there right now.
Yeah. Hey, we've got a lot more coming up on the free-for-all here on AgriTalk. Sean Haney, your guest host. We'll be right back right after this.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, the bottom fell out after some strong rallies yesterday. Start us over at the winter wheat contracts, which seem to be taking advantage of extended limits.
Yeah, extended limits of 75 cents today and testing those levels in the May HRW contract. Just limit up yesterday, extended limits today, the market was really knee-jerk to the upside yesterday, knee-jerk to the downside today. And this is not just wheat. We're talking across the grain and soy markets now.
Right.
Rationales out the window. Everything, fundamentals out the window. This market is based on emotion and money flow. And the money is flowing out of the long side of the market ahead of the weekend. There's reports that maybe Russia and the Kremlin have decided to meet with or agreed to meet with Ukraine and some of its officials. We'll see what happens on that front. But like I said, money flow and emotion, and they're to the downside today.
Boy, I'm looking at soy meal and soy oil, both markets taking it pretty hard. But let's move over to the livestock. I've got feeder cattle higher today. There's a bright spot.
Well, the reason the feeder cattle are higher is because of the corn market.
I was afraid you'd say that.
When you got sharp losses in corn, you're going to end up with the feeder cattle trying to move to the upside in some corrective trade. We had some corrective trade also attempted in live cattle futures, but that's kind of waned here mid-morning and now trading mostly to the downside. Hog futures continue to fall, so more signs of a top in that market after the past 2 days of heavy losses.
All right, that's Pro Farmer Editor. Thanks, Brian Grady, on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Sean,
welcome,
you coffeeed
back
up
to AgriTalk. I'm ready to go. We're ready for the second half of the program here for sure. Sean Haney, your guest host of AgriTalk, along with the handsome newsman himself, Davis Michelson, and Hello. Pro Farmers Washington D.C. analyst Jim Wiesmeyer. Okay, Jim, I'm hearing and reading a lot about SWIFT, and it's all related to this situation with Russia and the sanctions. What exactly is SWIFT?
Well, the reason they call it SWIFT is the long name, Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunication. It's basic terms, it's a global financial messaging network, Sean. It connects, more than 11,000 banks. And Ukrainian officials were very vocal in urging Biden to block Russia from SWIFT. But the White House avoided that because some officials there on background said it could lead to a rise in global energy prices. Now, interestingly so, Russia and China have been working on their own alternative to SWIFT. It's the cross-border interbank payment system. And that's another concern, that if they push that too hard, then you're going to move a big way away from SWIFT. And, you know, that's about as basic as I can get. Germany did not support it as well, because it would be very detrimental short term to their economy.
Yeah, I think Canada is one of the countries that is supporting kicking them out of SWIFT. So, Jim, there's been a lot of criticism, but also support it all across political lines, I would say, on the level of the sanctions that President Biden is putting on Russia in this situation. The people you're talking to in D.C., what are you hearing in terms of, are these sanctions enough? Are they strong enough?
Well, the people I've talked with say, first, let's give it some time to see, maybe less time than Biden said, a month or so to really analyze. But the people I've talked with say these are fairly significant sanctions, to be fair. So we're going to see. Now, if Russia keeps up expanding their territory in Ukraine, then we're going to see additional sanctions. Most people wanted to get at Russia's oil exports, but it looks like the administration just didn't want to go there. You know, bottom line, I think that they're more forceful than what the open market is saying they are.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, Davis, that's one of the big questions here, mm-hmm. is, does this stop at Ukraine?
Keep wondering, yes.
Yeah.
To me, and there are a lot of details in the minutia that I don't necessarily fully grasp. It just feels like a soft response. Russia's breaking things and killing people. And we've got these sort of paper solutions. And you just wonder if it's scary enough, and what might be the next target of annexation. I don't know if there is one, but I just feel like a stronger response is needed here, and I'm not sure what that is. Maybe that's why I'm not the president, that among other reasons, but it seems a little soft, and it almost seems to open the door for similar future moves.
Can
in
I
the
jump
same
in
way
real
that,
quick?
That Crimea did, yeah.
I just want to jump in real quick. Now, you know, I had heard that one of Putin's reasons for going into Ukraine was because he did not like, or he wanted an assurance that a NATO invitation, so to speak, would not be made to Ukraine, or that they wouldn't be, welcomed into NATO. But also, we've been hearing that he just wants to reassemble the old, you know, Soviet Union. Maybe the answer is both. But I'm curious about, when we're talking about if this could have been avoided, what if, for instance, NATO had made a promise to not accept Ukraine or reach out to Ukraine?
Well, was NATO membership even on the table for Ukraine? I have the sense it was not.
No, it wasn't. But I think he just used that as an excuse, because look at the Baltic states. They're already members. He wants to get Ukraine in under their total control. He doesn't even count it as a country, as he said. It's Russia. And he wants their mineral resources. And he really wants that port angle by the Crimea. He wants total control there. And where agriculture markets could come right back next week are twofold, if these talks go nowhere between Putin and whomever in Ukraine. And because Ukraine shut their ports and Russia closed the Azov Sea ports, the Black Sea terminals are still operating. But that could mean that this commodity run-up we saw earlier this week could have more legs to it.
Yeah, okay, Jim. What I've been really interested in this week, too, is the response and opinion from people inside the Republican Party. And there's three people I'll kind of pick out here. Former Secretary Pompeo, President Trump, and Tucker Carlson. Really take almost I would describe it as almost like a sympathetic, less hard line against some of Putin, what he's doing. What would he make of this? And because I've heard other people in the Republican Party speak out very strongly against what Putin's doing. what do you make of these comments from these three individuals?
Well, the old Republican credo, if there's any left anymore, would say that in a foreign policy situation, you defend the White House, whether or not they're your party or not. As far as Tucker Carlson, I could care less what he thinks. But I just go on, once you're in a battle like this, you have to give our president, a chance to see if some things work. That's just, but yeah, you'll always have some Republicans. Now, in this case, Pompeo, former Secretary of State, I want to listen to him a little bit more than, Trump and Tucker Carlson.
Well, and so I've he's seen the signal. Some... Okay, go ahead, David. Sorry.
Well, I've seen some fringe type stuff that are attributing Putin's actions to maybe pushing back against. And Malanga mentioned it. Vince Malanga mentioned it yesterday, pushing back against the green movement and pushing back against the World Economic Forum and all this Build Back Better type of stuff. And could it just be that simple that he just needs to make a statement against those who would wish for a more global world and the green initiatives?
Who's he?
Mr. Putin.
Oh,
I just think we give there's a lot of stuff going around about the World Economic Forum. I just wonder if we don't give it way too much street cred.
I wonder that too.
Is there really this master plan? I'm just really skeptical about how everything seems to resort back to, because I get emails and phone calls from our audience at Real Agriculture, and there's so much focus on the World Economic Forum right now.
I get them too.
I'm just skeptical that it's this sort of overarching, has control of all these people. And I just think we're giving it too much legitimacy in terms of its power. Jim, fair?
I just go with what Biden labeled Putin yesterday, an international pariah. And so far, I think that's an adequate statement.
Yeah, I was telling you guys during the break, it's tough times for people in Russia from a traveling standpoint, their economy, depending on how much China backstops them. I'm a big F1 fan and saw that the Haas racing team out of the U.S. taking the Russian colors off their car, and possibly the Russian driver is going to Mazepin, I think his name is. He is going to lose his seat potentially. So this has overarching effects even into things like the sports world. Hey Jim, this week we heard, just on to another matter. We heard this week USDA and their Outlook Forum talking about 92 million acres of corn and 88 of soybeans. It doesn't seem like enough soybeans, based on what I've been hearing from a lot of analysts.
Yeah, I don't want to poo-poo USDA, but they're guesstimates. They're just analysts, their opinion. It's not based on any surveys. And yeah, most industry analysts I talked with said this was a look back, not look ahead conference in many terms, not all. But yeah, I wouldn't put too much focus on their guesstimates on the S&D for corn, soybeans, and wheat. And some of their numbers just, planted acres, what, of soybeans, 88 and 92 for corn. It just doesn't add up.
Well, and number is what gets me on the corn. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. Talk about that.
Well, that yield number at 181 bushels per acre on the corn crop, that, with inputs the way that they are, no one's going to be using any extra nitrogen. And I can't imagine that we're going to grow a 181 bushel yield. That's the number that gets me.
That's the trouble with models. It's what you put in it. That's probably based on the ERS yield model, if history is any judgment, which I think it is here.
Sure.
So, these are just analyst guesstimates, and that's all they
right
are.
but Davis, on the fertilizer, isn't there incentive to chase yield with where prices are? Well, on the commodity end, on the corn price,
well, you definitely got to make it count at the back end of the season for sure. It's just a matter of, I guess, taking the leap when you're able to lock in what prices and penciling it in. I've heard a lot of guys say, there's still room for some black ink in the ledger here, but that's been before this most recent round of price increases, thanks to the conflict. And so it may be a whole different ballgame from here on out if that nitrogen isn't already booked.
Well, if you have a thought out there in the AgriTalk audience on where you think the acreage numbers are going to land on corn and soybeans, even throw in wheat if you like, send us a tweet, hashtag AgriTalk. We've got more to discuss on the free-for-all right after this quick break.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 8554.
Yeah, don't. Sean, take it from here, quickly.
Hey, we are
back. Phone thing doesn't work.
AgriTalk.
It's broken. It's broken, okay?
Oh, my goodness. What happened with that bump music? We were doing so well.
We were. Well. We love the Hanson here, but no, sorry.
There you go. Okay, Sean Haney, your guest host here today on AgriTalk from Real Agriculture and Real Ag Radio. Lots being covered here so far. Hey, I want to mention that this afternoon on the AgriTalk PM show, Davis will be filling in for Chip, and I think a good day to tune in for sure, as it is every day, but trying to break down and figure out, Davis, what is going on in this commodity market as it relates to what's happening in Ukraine, and trying to figure out, risk off situation or weight. Lots to talk about with Alan Brugler from Brugler Marketing this afternoon.
Hey, I've Jim, got lots of questions for Mr. Brugler. Yes, go on.
You should. Yep. Exactly. Yes. I'll be listening in and trying to get some answers myself.
Outstanding.
Hey, Jim, let's talk about the Supreme Court. Ketanji Brown Jackson. What do we make of this?
Well, she overturned a trio of Trump executive orders, making it easier to fire federal employees and that limited union bargaining rights. So that'll get the support of more than a few Democrats just for her doing that. And I think she'll be confirmed almost for sure, because she was confirmed to her appellate court post last June by a 53-44 vote. So I think it'll be at least that, because she got the support of Republican Senator Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Lindsey Graham, in addition to every Democrat. So I think she's in.
So don't expect like a Kavanaugh type drama, or how this has all been played out, like not kind of back to more of a regular scenario.
Well, nothing's regular in D.C. anymore, but it won't be the theatrics that we saw that you had mentioned. But you always have grandstanders on, both political parties. So we could see a few, but it won't be anywhere near the visceral episodes that we've seen over the last two, if not three, justices.
Good old political grandstanding.
Yeah, well, like with the November elections coming up too, that they're going to be calling it a massive major win, wouldn't you say, Jim? I mean,
yes.
They got to chuck up some kind of win here.
Yes, and for Biden at this particular time, that's why they're announcing it. Well,
sure.
Partly reason why they're announcing it today, and I don't blame him politically. This is good news for his particular party.
It's good strategy. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, hard to believe the midterms are already going to be here this fall.
Right.
Time flies for sure. In other news that I'm watching closely to see how this all turns out, because we just kind of went through this in Canada. Not the truckers' convoy, but the people's convoy is headed to Washington, D.C. to protest things like COVID-19 vaccination requirements, mask mandates. Davis, have you been hearing much about this from the AgriTalk audience?
I really haven't a whole lot. I would flip it back, because I haven't heard what's up in Canada. There were some who called the Prime Minister, Trudeau.
Prime Minister, yep.
Yeah, Trudeau's actions rather draconian, and were concerned that maybe he had locked down just a little bit too hard. The state of emergency was declared. Is that still in place up there?
So it's not. They have withdrawn it. It never actually even made its way to the Senate. They took advantage of it in the interim. I have described it on Real Ag Radio multiple times as I feel like we kind of skipped some steps. you didn't hear from the prime minister for like 3 weeks while people were congregating in Ottawa. And all of a sudden it's like, we're putting in the Emergencies Act, which gives the government crazy power when it comes to things like bank accounts and insurance and those kinds of things. It you know what, it's all it's done is it's removed more trust in institutions and things like that. As you know, there's stories about people withdrawing money out of accounts, and it's just really, I just think the prime minister really made a mistake. The Ottawa convoy is gone, but the sentiment still remains. Okay. Yeah, they've gone home.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it's going to be interesting because this is going to be linked in part to the March 1 State of the Union address, because, you know, Biden's got, it could be an opportunity for Biden to pivot on COVID, because we see the CDC coming out, I think today, with a revised mask mandate again, more liberal. And we're going to see if Biden takes the opportunity to scale down, you know, some of the mandates, requirements, et cetera. But and he'll talk about, of course, his favorite programs, carbon mitigation program. But of course, we'll be riveted to see any developments that he talks about relative to the Russian invasion. But as far as the convoy, we've already got the fence going up around Congress again. They don't want any surprises. And so I think this is all tied together.
Ooh, you know, Jim, to be honest with you, I hadn't thought about the fence, and then thinking back to January 6th, and there's a lot of issues kind of crossing over here. I hadn't made that connection.
And a subtle signal by the Democrats is that fence equates to January the 6th. They won't say this publicly, but that's why they wanted the fence up.
Well, and headed into the midterms, President Biden is going to want to make that shift on COVID, is he not? And where it's like, hey, look, we got through it, and we're moving on. They're not going to want to go into the midterm still talking about how we got to do what's right. They're going to want to shift, correct?
Yes, but many people tell me the damage is already done. Just look at the parents and the schools and the kids and all that. It could really be a negative House election for the Democrats here if the current patterns run true. The Republicans could really garner from 25 to 35 seats net.
Boy. Really? Okay. Well, the midterms are right here, but boy, there's a lot that can happen in between now and then, whether it's domestically or geopolitically, that impacts the popularity of not only the White House. Of course, it's not a general election, but the Republicans are looking to regain some ground and take over power. So, hey, Jim, have yourself a great weekend.
Sure.
And Davis, thanks so much for the support. Great insight. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks for doing it, buddy.
Hey, reminder to everybody to tune in to the AgriTalk PM show. Davis will be covering all things markets. It's been so much fun to be your guest host today, Sean Haney from Real Agriculture and Real Ag Radio. Have yourself a great weekend.